This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world development. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
And I'm Yehi Suhib. Coming up on Africa News Tonight,
we are just going into the rain season. Starting this month, we are going to be starting to be receiving our rain. And most of the areas in the rural areas are impassable during the rain season. So we cannot go there and move any food to kind like save the lives, as it were. Anything beyond that period would mean that we would not be able to move the food and also be in a position to be reaching out to those needy communities.
That is Daniel Muchena, South Sudan Country Director for the humanitarian organization Plan International. He says time is running out for hundreds of thousands of people in dire need of food and supplies in South Sudan. Details coming up.
Also, the Red Cross says the number of people in Kenya needing emergency food aid has doubled in the past 3 months to 3 million. And conflicts and protracted humanitarian crises are threatening food security in the Near East and North Africa.
We'll have these stories and lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight. Our top story, the Red Cross says the number of people in Kenya needing emergency food aid has doubled in the past 3 months and to 3 million, and it warns that number could rise to 4 million in the coming weeks. AFP quotes Kenya Red Cross Secretary General Dr. Abbas Galata saying the situation is getting worse every day. He says that malnutrition rates among children are steadily climbing and that children are getting sick. More than 340,000 children under age 5 are listed as being acutely malnourished. Gullet says the livelihoods of many families have been decimated after the loss of thousands of livestock in the ongoing drought. The drought has also triggered violent clashes between pastoralist communities, leaving at least 30 dead.
A humanitarian agency warns that hundreds of thousands of children in South Sudan are at risk of dying if they're not soon provided with food relief. Plan International says time is running out due to the impending onset of the rainy season. Daniel Muchenda is the group's country director for South Sudan. He is calling on the government and rebels to allow humanitarian organizations access to the country's unity state, where access has been heavily restricted due to fighting and insecurity. Muchenda spoke with me about his urgent call to allow for safe passage and access for humanitarian assistance to the most vulnerable people.
The reason why I'm saying that is we are just going into the rain season. Starting this month, we are going to be starting to be receiving our rains, and most of the areas in the rural areas are impassable during the rain season. So we cannot go there and move any food to kind like save the lives, as it were. Anything beyond that period would mean that we would not be able to move the food and also be in a position to be reaching out to those needy communities.
So what needs to be done so that you all can access the people? So
we are calling the government to facilitate access to the communities now so that the humanitarian organizations are able to reach to those people that are in a famine situation. What is happening now is that we cannot go to those areas because there's fighting that is taking place. And also, even along the way, when people are driving to those areas, they are falling into some ambushes, like what happened over the weekend. Some eight workers were killed who were traveling from Juba to Pibo. So those are the kind of situations that we are calling upon the government to act upon.
Have you been able to gain access into Unity State?
Ourselves as Plan International, we have not managed to. Some organizations are doing some airdrops that's going in during the day and fly out. They cannot continue to be in the area because there's fighting going on. Though, of course, the government has assured international organizations to say they will facilitate that movement. But there's no free access as we can talk now. The people that received some aid, it was through some airdrops by WFP who went in just to do some airdrops and it reached out to a number of people. But as you know, there could be a lot of malnourished children that are in that area that require personalized attention, and that cannot happen now because of that insecurity.
What more does the international community need to do at this point?
I think the international community has to engage with both the government and the opposition that are fighting to really impress upon them to realize some kind of arrangement so that they can stop fighting and allow humanitarian access to reach out to the needy people. And also the other call for the international community is to be providing aid, because the aid is needed now. We need to release the funds and also the support to the communities, which is not really forthcoming now. Whatever we are getting are very limited resources that are not able to meet all the needs on the ground.
What will the months ahead be like if the food crisis continues as it is now?
If the situation goes unabated, it means we will see a situation where people get to the starving levels and even some lives will be lost. So we really require some support as a matter of urgency.
Daniel Muchena is Plan International's country director for South Sudan. He spoke with me from Bulawayo, Zimbabwe.
As the breakaway Republic of Somaliland grapples with a severe drought, medical workers are struggling to aid people left weakened by hunger. VOA's Abdulaziz Osman filed this report from a local hospital in Irigavo, the capital of Sanag region. Rob Rafael narrates his report.
This 70-year-old hospital is operating beyond full capacity to treat people affected by the drought. And it's the only hospital in Somaliland's Sanag region. The drought has left tens of thousands of children acutely malnourished. In desperate need of treatment, they are checked as they lie on the beds in the stabilization center ward. The hospital's director says most of the admitted children come from rural areas.
The drought forced most pastoralists to move from one area into another. Some came to the cities, but most of the malnourished children admitted here are from the rural area.
Adiris Salah, a 14-month-old boy, weighed just over 6 kilograms when he was brought to the hospital from the Durar IDP camp. His mother, fighting back tears, says her son was suffering from severe diarrhea and malnutrition. His doctor said Salah is improving and now weighs 7.2 kilograms.
He was very weak when he was referred here. His weight and height were too low. We put him in the stabilization center as he was in the severely malnourished cafeteria. The initial phase, he couldn't take the feeding or the milk, so we inserted the NG tube to increase his feeding. Now, he still has the NG tube.
Medical officials say some families in the drought-stricken area cannot afford to bring their children to local medical centers. But doctors encourage parents to make the trip if they can.
In rural areas, sometimes families with malnourished children are not able to bring them to hospitals. So, for example, if a mother has 10 kids and 5 of them are malnourished, we beg her to bring the sick children to a hospital.
The United Nations has said more than 6 million people across Somalia and Somaliland are in need of help due to the extended drought, which shows no sign of ending. For Abdulaziz Osman, I'm Robert Rafael, VOA News.
Conflicts and protracted humanitarian crises are threatening food security in the Near East and North Africa. The UN Food and Agriculture Organization says water scarcity and climate change are adding to the problem. VOA's Joe DiCapua reports.
A new report says wars and the widespread human tragedy they cause could reverse the gains made in the Naina region against hunger and poverty. Abdelsalam Ould Ahmed is FAO Assistant Director General and Regional Representative for the Near East and North Africa.
The food security situation has been deteriorating very, very rapidly over the last couple of years.
Speaking from Cairo, he says the region never used to be a hot spot when it came to food insecurity. But that's changed. Ahmed says the problem is growing at a faster pace than almost any other region.
The number of undernourished people have almost doubled since 1990, and the prevalence of undernourishment is now estimated to be around 9.5%.
9.5% represents about 30 million people. The FAO Assistant Director General says conditions are much worse in the Near East than in North Africa.
The situation in North Africa is better than the Near East. because obviously the crisis there is limited now to Libya, and Libya is a rich oil country, and we have not seen yet the huge impact on food security that we are witnessing in the Near East because of the Syria crisis, Iraq crisis, and because of the Yemen crisis and their impact to the surrounding countries. This is where today the highest number of food insecure in the region is located.
Ahmed says the effects of conflict are made worse by climate change and scarce water resources. Those resources are being strained by a rapidly growing population and huge demands by agriculture. 80% of available water goes to growing food and raising livestock.
What is the future holding for us? We can't obviously keep giving more water to agriculture.
The report recommends planting new varieties of crops that use less water and are salt tolerant. Other measures include converting from grain crops to fruits and vegetables and reducing food waste. 30% of the food produced in the region is lost somewhere along the supply chain, whether it be during harvesting, storage, transport, or consumer use.
If we were able simply to reduce that amount by 50%, it will already contribute to increasing significantly the food supply while indirectly saving water resources.
The FAO also urges countries in the Near East and North Africa to find ways to increase the supply of water and access to it. Options include treating wastewater, such as runoff from farms and urban areas, harvesting rainwater, and building desalinization projects. The FAO report says countries such as Algeria, Jordan, Mauritania, Morocco, Sudan, Syria, and Tunisia all highlight the threat of climate change to their water security. Ahmed says making the recommendations a reality will take political will and a lot of money. But he says there's a lot of support for them both inside and outside the region. Joe DiCapua, VOA News, Washington.
You're listening to Africa News Tonight live on the following frequencies, 15, 580 and 6080 kilohertz on the Voice of America. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
I'm Yehiz Wuhib, 17 past the hour. Here's a recap of our top stories. The number of people in Kenya needing emergency food aid has doubled in the past 3 months to 3 million. Hundreds of thousands of children in South Sudan are at risk of dying if they're not soon provided with food relief. And conflicts and protracted humanitarian crisis are threatening food security in the Near East and North Africa. And for more news and information, visit our website at voaafrica.com.
The number of migrants who've crossed the Mediterranean to Europe so far this year has reached nearly 26,600, and nearly 650 have died trying to make the journey. The International Organization for Migration says about 22,000 of the migrants arrived in Italy, more than 3,600 landed in Greece, and about 1,000 in Spain. In other migrant news, the European Commission says Hungary must guarantee its new migrant detention policy does not violate EU rules for those seeking asylum. Hungary is detaining migrants at its border, but the Commission says the government has agreed to work on legislation calling for migrants to be housed in camps while their asylum applications are considered. However, the UN Refugee Agency warns it's against the law to detain children. It says the proposed legislation would allow children over the age of 14 to be held in shipping containers at the border. Reuters reports Hungary has placed more than 300 shipping containers in two transit zones at its border with Serbia.
There is some turmoil in the education field in Cameroon. Teachers in the country's 8 French-speaking regions have joined their colleagues on strike. In its 2 English-speaking regions, Moki Edwin Kenzeka reports from Yaoundé, the Francophone teachers say they are owed salary from as far back as 7 years.
No pay, no school. Hundreds of teachers from Cameroon's secondary and high schools demonstrated Tuesday outside the Ministry of Finance in Yaoundé. Among them is 27-year-old Rogers Kiven, who traveled to the capital from Mokolo on Cameroon's border with Nigeria. He says he began teaching 4 years ago, but has not been paid.
We discovered that 2 years, 3 years, 4 years after that, we still have not had a franc. We communicated our minister, and he communicated with his colleague from finance. From those communications, we were able to deduce that our monies were with the minister of finance. Inasmuch as we are not paid, we are not going to leave this place.
Officials met with teacher representatives late Monday. The teachers refused a request to stop their strike while the government examines the issue. Ministry of Secondary Education Human Resources Director Musa Jafaru spoke during that meeting.
Le dossier dont je viens de vous parler, c'est 11,648 dossiers. On l'aurait quand même.
He says the Ministry of Secondary Education has forwarded to the Ministry of Finance more than 11,000 authenticated files from teachers who have to be paid. He says he understands that it may be difficult to raise the money and pay them at once, but that there should be transparency, traceability, and rationality in what is done. An official at the Ministry of Finance did not respond to a request from VOA for an interview. Cameroon has around 80,000 secondary school and high school teachers. Those claiming salary arrears are primarily recent graduates, about 20,000 of them, according to the association that organized the strike. Each year in Cameroon, the state recruits about 2,000 teacher training graduates, but they say their monthly wages come late or not at all. 30-year-old teacher Zudom Calvin from Eastern Cameroon blames administrative bottlenecks.
They ask us to compile documents, and even when we compile those documents, sometimes they get lost. So we don't want their system to go on like that. He must pay us.
The teachers say they are in debt and struggling to take care of their families. This new strike leaves many classrooms empty at schools around the country. Schools remained closed in Cameroon's two English-speaking regions, the Northwest and the Southwest, as a separate teacher strike enters its fifth month. Moki Edwin Kinzuka for VOA News, Yaoundé.
Well, this week, government ministers and education-oriented NGOs gather in Argentina for the second international conference on safe schools. The meeting is sponsored by the international charity Education Above All and its program called Protecting Education in Security and Conflict. It seeks international support for the Safe Schools Declaration, which aims to protect schools from attack and conflict areas. So far, 60 states have signed the non-binding document. VOA's William Eagle spoke with an academic advisor to the charity, Malaya Malik, about the impact of attacks on children.
Attacks on education and military use of school impacts on hundreds of thousands of children. Just to give you a couple of examples from Africa, in the Central African Republic during late 2012, 2013, 100 schools were damaged, destroyed or looted, 24 used for military purposes, and a recent assessment in the country found that 30% of schools had been attacked. South Sudan, for example, 31% of schools have been attacked, and we know that there have been 273 separate cases of attacks around the country in the great Upper Nile region.
Tell us more about the Safe Schools Declaration. How many countries have signed so far, and what does it suggest that they do?
It's an intergovernmental political commitment which allows states to join up and commit to taking sensible actions, really common sense steps, to make it less likely that students, teachers, universities will be attacked. And the measures include providing assistance to victims of attack, promoting conflict-sensitive approach, Probably in Africa, the most important measure is a guideline to protect schools and universities from military use, because school buildings are a really valuable asset during a conflict, which are used by both the state and armed non-state actors. It's a very important way in which attacks to education can be prevented, and we can take sensible steps to make sure that children who are living during armed conflict and during insecurity can have access to education. Just to give you some figures, there's been fantastic momentum building up in time for Argentina, so that we now have France joined in February, Canada has joined, we're hoping there'll be other countries joining. We're in about 60 countries at the moment, and we're hoping that that'll increase up to 100 sometime soon. In terms of African countries, it's quite a good list, actually, not comprehensive, but Angola's a member, Chad, Democratic Republic of Congo, Kenya, Niger. Nigeria is very significant because of attacks on education in Boko Haram, but also Somalia, South Sudan are also signatories. And so there is quite a good momentum, quite a good list of African countries who I think are members.
Is there any outreach to non-state actors in terms of having them interested or signing the Safe Schools Declaration?
There's an organization called Geneva Call, based in Geneva, that's done fantastic work in reaching out to armed non-state actors, including armed non-state actors in Africa, in the sub-Saharan Africa. And they had a conference last year where half a day was devoted to working with armed non-state actors, informing them about the Safe Schools Declaration, but also informing them about the practical measures they can take to make sure that they don't recruit children under their control into armed groups, that they try and make sure that children are safely handed over to agencies such as UNICEF or Save the Children, and to make sure they respect children who are under their control as children, rather than trying to use them as an asset of war.
What do you hope to accomplish at the Safe Schools Conference in Argentina?
I think what would be fantastic to get from the conference is to carry on allowing states who have endorsed to come together and put international pressure on states that haven't yet endorsed. And I think it's a matter of great regret to me that my own country, the United Kingdom, hasn't signed up to the Safe Schools Declaration. I think the United States would be a fantastic leadership role if they were able to sign up to the Safe Schools Declaration as a sign of their global leadership in safeguarding education. I think there might be some potential within the European Union that if Germany could be persuaded to sign up, that would provide fantastic leadership in Europe towards strengthening global governance to safeguard education during war and conflict.
That was Malaya Malik, an advisor to the international charity Education Above All. She spoke with reporter William Eagle.
And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yehi Suhib in Washington.
And I'm Kim Lewis. And for all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Please stay tuned to the Sunny Side of Sports coming up at 18:30 UTC. On behalf of our producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, John Dryden, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.
Hello, I am your host, Shaka Salee. Every Wednesday night, the Voice of America's Straight Talk Africa puts you in touch with newsmakers and experts as they talk about the most important social and political issues that affect you.
On the next Straight Talk Africa, 20 million people are suffering from a hunger crisis. An in-depth discussion on the international call for action on the next Straight Talk Africa at 18:30 UTC.
Hello, Africa. This is James Barty, host of Daybreak Africa, inviting you to join me every weekday morning at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC as we bring you the latest in African news, features, and sports. You can also be a part of Daybreak Africa through our listener mail segment by sending your comments and opinions to daybreakafrica@voanews.com. You can also call us and leave us a voicemail at 202-205-9942. That's 202-205-9942. And when you hear the Voice of America identification, press the number 25 to leave us your message. Start your day with Daybreak Africa every weekday morning at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC on the Voice of America. Africa.